Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you.
Hello and welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Nikki Bo, and today I have the esteemed privilege of speaking with colleagues from the GTR Small Island Sustainability Institute. Of course, we all know that sustainability has been the buzzword and has been garnering a lot of attention in recent years, particularly as we talk about small island sustainability, as we talk about climate change and global warming and the impact it can have on small island developing states. Well, the University of the Bahamas is remaining ahead of all that's happening. My guests today are Dr. Carlton Watson, Interim Director of Small Island Sustainability, Solomon Amankwa, Assistant Professor of Environmental Sciences, Dr. Kristen Welsh Onwala, Assistant Professor of Environmental Sciences, Dr. Valier Delavaux, Research Scientist in Marine Sciences. Ladies and gents, welcome to University Drive.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting us.
So I want to get right into this conversation, and I want all of you to chime in, particularly as it relates to your various specialties. But I'm going to start with you, Dr. Watson. Tell us, what is the GTR Small Island Sustainability Research, Institute all about, and what are some of its, what is its key mandate?
Okay. Great question. As you noted, the GTR Campbell Small Island Sustainability Institute was really the gift, a gift and the vision from the Freedom Foundation, and Dr. Brenda May Clear, who was the dean at the time, wrote a grant to secure the funds to create the structure and also the programs. And the vision of Small Island Sustainability is really to address critical areas necessary for the environmental, economic, and social sustainability of the country. And we all know that one of the biggest threats, and also to address the threats to sustainability, and as we know, one of the biggest threats is climate change. But we also, it started at that time and still continues with a strong focus on food and agriculture and the environmental sciences. So this SIS, as we call it, is really a focus on some cross-cutting areas in marine, environmental sciences, ecotourism, sustainable development, sustainable agriculture and fisheries, and integrative planning. And to support research and teaching in that area, we have developed a set of labs that will enable us to conduct high-level research that can inform policy, that will produce data so that we are making decisions with the best available data. And we also have a strong focus on addressing sustainable livelihoods and the needs of our communities. As you know, we are an archipelago, and it is a part of our national psyche that we do not leave our family islands behind. And so a lot of the work that we focus on is also to address the sustainability of those islands. And I must add, also, we see SIS as a hub for the country and the institution to bring together practitioners and faculty from varied disciplines to engage in research and teaching and to address national needs. And we work closely in looking at the National Development Plan to ensure that our program aligns and is responsive to that. And so one of the things we are often doing is working with a lot of the NGO community and working with the government so that we work collaboratively to address some of these very complex problems.
Dr. Watson, you said a whole lot, and I just kind of want to recap some of what you said for the sake of our listening audience. You spoke about the environmental, economic, and social sustainability, and that being part of the driving force behind GTR, Small Island Sustainability Institute. And then you spoke about food and agriculture, environmental science, marine science, ecotourism, and integrative planning. Now, when we think about sustainability, I know a lot of times we kind of use that word loosely and casually, but from a scientific standpoint or from the expert standpoint, what really is the crux of sustainability and why is it important? And I'd like all of you to chime in from your various areas of expertise.
Sustainability really covers the three pillars that you just mentioned and that Dr. Watson previously mentioned, looking at economy, society, and the environment and how they work together, how we can live sustainably. We're addressing environmental issues within the country, but we have to do so in the context of the greater economy and society as well. And I think a lot of what we teach within the SAS program and what we're studying is that many of the sustainability and environmental science issues that we come across are really unique to small islands and unique to the Bahamas. So we're trying to address environmental problems within the context of being a small island nation and all that's unique about it.
Also like to add that we don't live on an island in terms of being globally, because we're not isolated. We are isolated on a small island, but we are part of the international community and we are impacted by everything that goes on around us. You know, the statement that if the US sneezes, we catch a cold. That is so true in so many ways, because we're great consumers. Most of the third world, first world nations impact climate more than we ever could. We're such a tiny nation and we're just a part of it. Our fisheries, our marine ecosystems are all impacted by everything going on globally, not just locally. There is local impact, of course, but we are all impacted by what's going on globally on a large scale. And so we have to do our part to minimize our impacts, our anthropogenic impacts on our ecosystems as best we can to sustain ourselves.
Yeah, to add up to what Dr. Delavaux has just said, we have a project ongoing at the moment. That is the Integrated Land Management Project that also seeks to address some sustainable development goals. And with that, we are able to also deal with some of the environmental issues we are facing, just like Mwala also said. So this project, at the end of the day, is going to add up to whatever other countries are also doing. We have some platforms that are set up to report on what we find on the ground, how bad the situation is, and how we can mitigate such environmental issues. So I think that's what we have going at the moment. So, yeah.
If I could add one thing as well to, you had asked previously about how do we define sustainability. I think it's important to note that the common definition of that is that we are living, addressing our current needs without compromising future generations and their ability to meet their needs. So trying to understand how we can live today, how we can access our resources that we have available to us, but also leaving something behind for future generations. And so a lot of what we're studying within the program and the research that we're doing is trying to understand best how we can do that within the pillars that we've talked about, economy, society, environment.
Right. It's really about how do we find that the best balance between development and conservation or exploiting our natural resources. If we are out of balance in either extreme, then it's problematic. I mean, we could live in a society where we say we conserve everything, and we don't want to disrupt the environment. But how far are we willing to take that? If we take a logical extension, does that mean we can't build houses? Because whenever we build a house, we typically will disturb what would have been, what might have been some environmental significance for animals or the like, or the environment. We all use resources and we all want to have our high-tech gadgets. We all want to live comfortably. Well, all of the resources we use, the physical resources we use, they come from the earth. And so we can't swing to one side where we say we're not going to do anything. But on the other hand, we also don't want to go to the extreme where we're just using up all of the resources in a way that's destructive to the planet, humans, animals, and the environment, at the expense that later on we don't, you know, we find ourselves in a more precarious situation. So
I have follow-up questions for each of you, and I kind of try to extract nuggets that you shared as you were kind of, you know, giving your input. And I'm going to start with Dr. Anwala, because she said she kind of gave the definition, addressing current needs without negatively impacting future generations. So when we talk about, and then Dr. Watson, you spoke about that balance between development and conservation. So I'm going to tie this all in, or I'm going to try, and I'm going to depend on you guys because you're the experts, right? Dr. Nwali, you said that there are some environmental problems that are unique to small islands and the Bahamas. What are some of those environmental issues that are unique to small islands and the Bahamas? Because a lot of times, for those of us that are not experts, that are not in the field, a lot of times we're basing this off of hearsay or off of emotion or what we think, and not necessarily the research or the realities of what the scientists are seeing and the evidence that is that the scientific worlds may have. What are some of those problems and challenges that are unique to us?
Sure. A lot of the issues that we're dealing with are because of our limited land space. So I'll take my area of expertise as an example. I'm a freshwater hydrologist. And I think a lot of times living within this environment, we think we have plentiful access to water because we have water all around us. But the reality is that we have very limited water, fresh water that's available. If we want to convert our seawater, we do have desalination plants, but that requires an intense amount of energy. And that also contributes to greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. And we're trying to combat the issues related to climate change. So we have very limited fresh water that's naturally available to us, and we have to think about how we can best utilize those resources. So in the past, in particular, before we even had desalination, we were relying on drinking water that came from the ground within our freshwater lenses, but there's a very limited amount of that. And many islands that are not largely populated, like Nassau, are still relying on groundwater. And so that is an extreme challenge when you have essentially anything that's happening on the land can contaminate or can impact your groundwater. Another example is what I just mentioned with climate change. All countries are dealing with climate change, but we are an island, an archipelago with very low altitude, very low elevation. And so as sea level rises, it impacts us even more significantly and more of our land space than larger countries. Looking back at freshwater, as I just mentioned, when you have sea level rise, then it can essentially contaminate your freshwater lens with seawater as the salt gets in, so you don't have freshwater sources available. So there's a lot of different challenges that span anything that we're looking at with the environmental sciences. It's really you have where a lot of those issues are exacerbated here being on a small island. And so a lot of our program and classes within our program focuses on those unique challenges.
Thank you for that, Dr. Anwala. So Dr. Delavaux, you mentioned that, you know, we, even though we are a small island, we're not isolated. We're part of the global community. And you made the analogy that when the US sneezes, we catch a cold and we're impacted by everything around us. What are some of those things that impact us that the ordinary person may be oblivious to or totally disregard that is impacting small islands and particularly the Bahamas?
Well, the Bahamas is a nation. The individuals tend to think of ourselves as first world because we have access to so many things that we bring in the country. We import virtually everything we use, consume, TVs, radios, and yet on such a small landmass, the fact that everything we use, they tend to have a short lifespan. And what do you do with them after? The ecological park has done such a great job in recent years reducing our footprint in terms of waste, pollution, all the rest of it, but we still have a very long way to go because our attitudes, packaging, everything has a space where it needs to go, has to be utilized, recycled in some way. And yet, recycling is almost non-existent in this country. There's very little that is done. And we bring in everything. And that's a major challenge for us. So a lot of nations reuse waste products to produce energy. That's something we don't do on any kind of large scale. Then we have a long way to go in terms of being sustainable, ecologically and environmentally sustainable. There's so much we can do to offset pollution, waste, greenhouse gas production in the country. I think that's just the start of it, but there's a lot we need to do in terms of the marine environment. One of the big problems we have that it starts off globally is ocean acidification. And that impacts our fisheries in terms of shell production of gastropods, crustaceans, the skeleton structures of many fish. Ocean acidification impacts those, slows the rates of growth, slows the rate of reproduction. And so we are impacted in many ways, but we don't contribute much to that in terms of the ocean acidification. There's very little we do to cause that, but we are certainly impacted by it. So that's just one of the ways that we need to be aware of and, do what we can to support conservation, recycling methods, whatever we can do to reduce our losses in that way.
And Nikki, if I may add too, if you talk about how, we're impacted by, outside of the Bahamas, when we look at how our economy is set up, a large part of our economy, as we know, the largest portion, we are a tourism-based economy. And so there are unique challenges just with regular land-based folks who fly in, the footprint. But when we think about cruise ships, right, and the impact, the potential impacts, negative impacts to our marine environment from waste, and that is something that we have to deal with, and that's something that we have to balance. I don't think there's any conclusion on this, but there has been some studies elsewhere in similar jurisdictions that are investigating whether one of our biggest threats we are facing now is stony tissue, coral tissue loss disease, Skiddle. And there are some theories that waste may be the source of that. Human waste potentially from ships. Again, it's not conclusive, but there's a thought to that. But certainly we know that independent of that, that pollution from ships, whether they are cruise ships, whether they are oil tankers, is a constant threat and hazard that we have to deal with. Throw into the mix the risk of hurricanes, another extreme weather events, as we saw in Grand Bahama, then we can also have, the interaction between, the natural and, natural disaster and oil, what happened with the Equinor and oil spill and the like. So we are very vulnerable, but at the same time, we depend on certain kinds of conditions for our tourism product to actually grow and flourish. So we have to try and balance that.
You guys have said so much and given so much insight. I don't want to leave Dr. Amankwa out of this because he spoke about this integrated lands management project. Why is it important when we talk about sustainability and land? Like, I believe that in like 10 years, 15 years, like land on New Providence is almost going to be vacant land is almost going to be non-existent, right? Why is it important for us to look at lands management or integrated lands management as a part of sustainability practices?
All right, that is a great question. First of all, I want us to see this whole integrated land management thing as a multidisciplinary concept, right? We have different fields coming together to do this. There's also one aspect to it that we have stakeholders also coming together. We have governments to play a role. We have local communities as well. We have academia. We have some private sectors and NGOs who also come together, and they all have certain interests. But the most important thing that we have to put at the top is how we preserve our ecosystems, right? When we talk about sustainability, we don't look at how we survive as humans, right? But we also look at how other species survive along with us. And some of these ecosystems that are around us are also the sources of survival of certain other species. And our activities as humans attach these ecosystems and then destroy them, right? And we are able to use some tools in remote sensing and also other geospatial data to identify some of these problems, right? So we have situations where we have some human activities encroaching certain forests. There'll be places where some species survive. We also have some other human activities that destroy other ecosystems. So what we want to do with this land integrated land management thing is to, in our part as those in academia, put some data sets together with which we can assess the level to which we have impacted our natural environment, how bad the degradation of the environment is. So we have data sets like the land use, the land cover change, which we can compute from remote sensing, remotely sensed information, right? So when we talk about remotely sensed information, we are looking at information that we have gathered off the face of the earth without being in touch with it, right? So we have satellite sensors and UAVs, we have other devices that we use to capture such information on different scales and resolutions. And that way we are able to tell what kind of changes are happening on the surface, how that is impacting the ecosystem, how that is degrading the land. And we can see what policy decisions we can make from the findings over here. So like I said, we have different different stakeholders coming together, right? So we play our part, we hand it over to the government or any other private sector or NGO institutions that need that kind of information to make their decisions as to how they impact the environment. So all of these parts come together to help make sure that our environment is preserved, at least in a way that all species can survive. And that way we know that we are also contributing our part. We that are alive on this planet now, we are contributing our part to make sure that the environment stays the same way or close to the way it was originally for the future generation.
Thank you very much for that. So we are approaching our first break, and you guys have all given very good information. When we come back on the other side of the break, I want us to delve into the program offerings of the Small Island Sustainability Institute and the specific areas of study, how it is going to benefit not only our students, but also our country, the research opportunities, faculty research, getting students involved in research, and all of that great stuff. So we take our first break here on University Drive. We'll be right back.
The one big draw of doing a doctoral degree here is that you don't have to move and you don't have to take your family to a different place, and so you can do it right here. The same abilities that you would have in a UK or with America with being able to research is available here. And we now have all these facilities, and so they can take advantage of it at a much cheaper cost to the individual.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
My name is Jeannie Gibson. I'm the policy assistant here at the Government and Public Policy Institute. The series that we normally do on a quarterly basis, one of those is Meet the Policymakers series, is to actually engage the policymakers to discuss relevant policies to what's going on relating to those policies here in the country, as well as to give the public an opportunity to hear and actually discuss it with the policymakers.
Welcome back to University Drive. If you're just joining the conversation, today we are talking about the Small Island Sustainability Research Institute at University of the Bahamas. My guests today are Dr. Carlton Watson, Interim Director, and his expertise is energy development and policy and sustainable development. Solomon Amankwa, Assistant Professor, Environmental Sciences, and his expertise is remote sensing, geographic information systems, and disaster management. Dr. Kristen Welch Onwalla, Assistant Professor, Environmental Sciences. Her expertise is hydrology, climate change, and stable isotope analysis. And Dr. Valier Delavaux, Research Scientist, Marine Sciences, and his expertise is fisheries, marine policy, and marine biology. We had us a very interesting conversation before the break, and it was kind of a cursory to, you know, getting an understanding of small islands, of sustainability, the importance of our small island sustainability, how the rest of the world is impacting what's happening here, what sea level rise is all about, the environmental problems that are unique and not so unique to us, what it means from an environmental, economic, social standpoint, and why sustainability is so important. Those are some of the things, the general things we covered before the break. Now we're going to delve into the programs here at University of the Bahamas. And I want each of you to tell us a little bit about what the program is in your area of specialty, and what are some of the unique features and some of the program highlights. Dr. Watson, I'm going to get started with you, and then we can go to Mr. Amankwa, and then Dr. Onwalla, and then Dr. Delavaux in that order.
Okay. Okay. The original programs, this is really an exciting time for us, because when we made the transition to university, we looked at our programs with a view to revise them. And so at that time, we put a few programs on hiatus while we were developing or revising them. And so originally we had a program in policy, one in environmental science, one in sustainable agriculture, and another in ecotourism. So currently, while we have admissions in sustainable agriculture, we are really focusing on the marine science program at this point. We found that this is where we've had the greatest amount of interest, particularly folks wanting to be marine biologists. And now we're going through and developing the environmental science. So we're taking a step by step. We want to make sure that whatever we produce, we're building off the knowledge from offering those past programs over the last 10 years, and we've produced some excellent graduates.
And we want to ensure that as times change, as our knowledge change, as our expertise change, that we revise the program. So the new program in marine science is in many ways radically significantly different from the original program. I think it also reflects a change in our thinking. We are focusing more on ensuring that students have a very, we've added to the fundamental preparation in this program. So sciences and math are more pronounced in this program. Opportunities for research. We know that we have to serve the needs of the country as a national university. So we're producing students who hopefully can go, can opt to go to university and do graduate degrees, but also folks who will work at local NGOs, who will work for government, and even we have instances of graduates who've gone into entrepreneurship, and we'll be found that they've done, all of them have done, as far as I know, all of them have done very well. As fast as we can graduate students, we find that they find jobs. And so this new program, another added feature to it is a study abroad component. We want to ensure that students get exposure beyond our shores. And some of that study abroad can include even international experiences in the Bahamas. We're exploring partnerships with institutions to work on a family island where they bring students and faculty, and with our students and faculty, where we can have unique learning environments. And that's the other focus is, and this is one of the key points why I think I can say clearly that the advantage of a University of Bahamas degree is that the kind of exposure you can get, especially if you're thinking about returning to the Bahamas, but also network of researchers from everywhere. The Bahamas is, you'd find faculty from and researchers from Europe, Asia, of course, United States, particularly many of our Florida schools. So we have world-class faculty here integrating with our world-class faculty. And so your network is going to be that much greater, as well as we have folks who are decision makers in the country who we interact with, who can teach or do teach modules in various courses. So I know I've said a lot, but the program is really about ensuring students have strong fundamentals. They have experience and exposure, not only to New Providence, but the Family Islands and internationally, and that it builds in enough flexibility to prepare them for graduate studies, or NGOs, government, or for entrepreneurship. And that's in the marine science. And now we're in the point of revising or developing an environmental science program. And Dr. Anwal is leading that while focusing on looking at our graduate programs, because that's the next step that we need to take. And that's why we are going out and recruiting the best faculty we can. That's why Dr. Amankwa, who is a remote sensing scientist, artificial intelligence, is here. You talk about some unique environments. And forgive me, when I start, it's hard to stop, so I'm going to stop in a bit. But you talk about some of the unique challenges that the Bahamas face. Well, our archipelagic nature is one of the biggest challenges and most unique. If you look around the Caribbean, even in the region, there's no other country in the region that has the kind of spread in terms of geography. In fact, you can almost fit, can you fit the Eastern Caribbean, a large part of the Eastern Caribbean, several countries within the Bahamas, all of the Eastern Caribbean states, right? So why we are focused, and that's the reason we are focusing on remote sensing, using the best technology, artificial intelligence, various kinds of geospatial visualization, because it's virtually impossible for us to monitor and to be all of our space, right? We still have to be on the ground, but how can we use the latest technology to minimize the amount of time we have to spend on the ground and maximize the use of technology? And that's why we are making a strong push in the artificial intelligence space, in the remote sensing space.
Thank you for that, Dr. Watson. I now want to hear from Dr. from Solomon Amankwa. You spoke about his the unique skills that he brings in terms of the artificial intelligence and the remote sensing. How does that factor in, and how are we integrating that into our programs? And why is that aspect of study, or why is that aspect of technology important in sustainability studies?
All right. Thank you for your question. First of all, there are certain kinds of analysis. Okay, we need data, or we need information to actually understand how our environment is changing over time. Right. So that is why we have these remote sensing technologies to help us do that. There are some places that we will not be able to reach. Right. We will not be able to reach. But when we have some sort of remote sensing technology like these satellites, we are able to reach these places, right? So sometimes if you want to do some kind of monitoring, environmental monitoring, you need remote sensing data. Dr. Watson talked about something like oil spills and all that. And sometimes these are not very feasible if you want to be on the ground. You have to use remotely sensed data, right? So we are integrating this into the program because students will learn how to capture and analyze these kinds of data sets for environmental monitoring and even for some kind of disaster management, right? So we know the kind of unique nature that the Bahamas has. Dr. Watson just mentioned it. But when you look at the geography of the Bahamas, we see it is generally a low-lying area, and we know how the Bahamas is also prone to some of these hurricanes and all these natural disasters. We can use remote sensing data sets to be able to predict some of these things before they happen. We can also use these data sets to also understand the impact. We can understand where and to what extent some of these disasters are going to hit, right? So students need some of these skills to be able to do some of these kinds of analysis, which we know will safeguard the lives of Bahamians and their property and everything that concerns them.
Thank you for that. Very critical information and integrating technology, because we know that the way of the world now is moving into technology. So it's good to know that our students, and then you spoke about remote areas and not being able, humans not necessarily being able to access those areas, but using the technology to access those so that research or gathering information is not hindered by lack of access. Dr. Anwala, we're going to turn things over to you now and your area of specialties. You spoke about being a freshwater hydrologist. What does that mean for the person that has never heard that term before?
That means that my focus is freshwater, so not looking at ocean water, and essentially how water moves through the landscape from rain to the point when it goes into the soils and entering groundwater, and how much we have, essentially how much water we have available to us as humans and how much is available on the land. An example of how, of taking this area of expertise and how we address the issues in the Bahamas, I have an upcoming research project this summer in which we're investigating the impacts of Hurricane Dorian on the freshwater lands in Grand Bahama. So prior to Hurricane Dorian in 2019, the entire island relied on groundwater for its drinking water source. And then when the hurricane came through, parts of the island were covered in essentially ocean water up to 22 feet in some areas, so that mixed with the freshwater lens that had naturally occurred over decades, and then the freshwater lens was no longer available. So everybody within the island did not have any drinking water available to them. So we're trying to study over time, how does that freshwater lens recover naturally? And we anticipate it's going to take decades. And because of that, the island had to pivot and find alternative drinking water sources. Immediately after the hurricane, we had to essentially ship in fresh water, fresh drinking water, and they have since moved to desalination. But ideally, we're able to look at other islands and use this as an example for situations that may occur and better plan our drinking water sources, because in some islands, desalination is not feasible and not it's not economically feasible given the population size that we have.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Delavaux, it's your turn now. Marine policy, fisheries, marine biology. We are surrounded by water. We love to fish. And why is it important for us to have fields of study devoted to this? I know we've been an agriculture and fisheries nation for a long time, but not necessarily had the textbook knowledge. It's, you know, a lot of it has been passed down from generation to generation. Why is it important to have university level or tertiary level education devoted to these things, and how is that going to benefit us in the future?
The whole idea of the GTW sustainability compass is the key word, sustainability. We in this country have always depended on our fisheries. Even the fisheries contribution to our GDP is approximately twice that of the agriculture component. And we certainly need to feed ourselves. And so it's been a great benefit that our fisheries have always been relatively strong. However, in some quarters, fears are being heard that we're overfishing. There's talk about the grouper being overfished, the conch being overfished, meaning they are not being sustainably managed. And therefore, we could run out of conch. We could run out of groupers, we could run out of snappers. Now, my job as a fisheries biologist is to do the research to find out whether or not they are sustainably being managed so that we can ensure that I can fish, my children can fish, their children can fish. That we won't have to, again, we already import many things. We are even now importing fish, but do we need to import even more just to meet our needs? So we have to do our part to fish sustainably in our environment. The Bahamas is 97% marine. A lot of bandits don't even know how to swim. That's one of my thieving points. And, you know, and I actually teach a scuba course here at UB. You can now learn to scuba dive for credit here at UB. And if you want to be a marine scientist, you should be able to work in your environment underwater to study the corals, to study the reef, to study grouper populations, grouper aggregations, to map these conch beds, to see how they respond to the vegetation, the sediments. All of these are important components that we take for granted right now, but we need to know for certain whether or not we are managing those resources sustainably. So it's very important for us as the local fisherman to know that he's doing a job, not over harvesting, not catching minimum resources below a minimum size, because he might question, why is there a minimum size? You know, and we want to provide the proper advice to government as to give them the management tools they need or the rules they should adopt so that they are and can set rules in place so that the resources can be sustainably managed. That's a key component. And we've taken it for granted for so long. One of the things I've always said is the Bahamas' saving grace has been our sheer size. As you mentioned earlier, the Bahamas stretches from Puerto Rico all the way down to Trinidad and Tobago. The entire Eastern Caribbean can fit within this one country. And yet our population is still relatively small. I mean, island of Trinidad and Tobago, which is less than the size of Andros, has over a million people on it. Jamaica, which is slightly larger than the Bahamas, but has over 2 million people on it. And we're approaching 500,000 now. And so we've taken available resources for granted, thinking that because our country is so large and our population is so small, we can harvest without care of managing our resources sustainably. And I think that's something we really need to pay attention to and act toward so that we can manage our resources and so that, as I said, our children and our children's children will still have our resources available.
Lady and gents, we have to take another break here on University Drive. When we come back, I want us to talk a little bit more about the future prospects of SIS. How do we get students that are in high school interested in marine science, interested in hydrology, interested in small island sustainability, exposing our students to that, getting parents aware, making them aware, providing them with employment, information about employment opportunities, because a lot of people are like, well, you know, where can I find employment as it relates to this? You guys shared a whole lot of things, but I think a lot of times students in high school in particular are not able to connect the dots between the studies and careers unless they've been exposed to that. So I want us to share information with our listening audience so that they can now be the mouthpiece for us about getting information out there and encouraging students to enroll in this program and to pique their interest. We take this quick break. We'll be right back on University Drive.
The one big draw of doing a doctoral degree here is that you don't have to move and you don't have to take your family to a different place, and so you can do it right here. The same abilities that you would have in a UK or with America with being able to research is available here. And we now have all these facilities, and so they can take advantage of it at a much cheaper cost to the individual.
My name is Jeannie Gibson. I'm the policy assistant here at the Government and Public Policy Institute. The series that we normally do on a quarterly basis, one of those is Meet the Policymakers series, is to actually engage the policymakers to discuss relevant policies to what's going on relating to those policies here in the country, as well as to give the public an opportunity to hear and actually discuss it with the policymakers.
Welcome back to University Drive. I'm your host, Nikki Bo, and today we are talking about small island sustainability and the research center here at University of the Bahamas. I'm joined by Dr. Carlton Watson, Solomon Amankwa, Dr. Kristen Walsh Onwala, and Dr. Valier Delvo. We've been having a very interesting conversation, and I'm sure I could almost have part 2, 3, and 4 of this because we've only began to, you know, delve into this. We've just touched the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more that we can talk about in each of your respective areas. But as we begin to wrap up the show, I want us to speak specifically and directly to students that are in high school that are doing sciences. Like, I did physics, chemistry, and biology in high school, but I knew nothing about marine science. I mean, I was not exposed to that back then, except through GGYA. And that was, you know, that was recreational more than anything else. How do we pique the interest of our current high school students to expose them to the possibilities that exist here at University of the Bahamas and future careers for them?
I think I'll take that one since I can't speak as an environmental scientist like my esteemed colleagues here. This interview, this show, and similar shows, I think, is a great avenue to get the word out. But I also want people who may not be aware that at one point we had a very thriving, until we stopped when we had a pause in the program. So to a great deal, I'm not as concerned about convincing students to go into the marine and environmental sciences as I may have been, say, 10 years ago, when we found that most of the biology students wanted to do medicine or some allied health field. We're finding now that a lot of young people are concerned about the environment, certainly about climate change, and want to play a part in be a part of the solution. And so I think it's really a matter of them knowing that this program exists. I think that's the main, that there's a program that exists. It's a very strong program. We have lots of very qualified experts here with very distinct research, as I mentioned, the three PhD professors here. But also, I would be remiss if I did not note that as we've developed this program, we've been very intentional about developing our program in Grand Bahama. And so we have also the opportunity, it's possible for a parent to even say in Nassau to say their son or daughter can travel to Grand Bahama to take this program as well. And as far as I know, if they're a full-time student, not only will their tuition be paid, but they will also be given a monthly stipend for rent. And so that, I think, opens up the possibility for parents who may want their students not to, you know, to get exposure beyond New Providence. The other thing that I think it's important for students to know, I mentioned this before, that we have a study abroad component and we really encourage the international collaboration. And in fact, that is one of the hallmarks of our program, is about partnerships. We are trying to, we even think at the national level, we're trying to shift the way that things are often done, if I must be blunt, in that in a lot of my, initially in a lot of my discussions with folks in different areas, in departments, in government, and elsewhere, there was a little reluctance, I would say. It's not as reluctance as much as the university has traditionally been a teaching institution. And what we're saying is we have no choice but for the university to contribute to new research, to provide the data for our decision makers and policy makers. And the only way that's going to be effective is if we work together. And so we put a strong emphasis on working together as teams, as our faculty, at the faculty level. And in our students, we also want to inculcate them with that value of teamwork, because this is not something that one person can do alone. And I always reflect that, you know, growing up as a student, a high school student, we put so much emphasis on who was coming first. There was always a group of us who would always, you know, compete for who would be the top five. And it was so much, you know, competition. And then we go and we take, you know, national exams, and all of that is good. But this is, you know, no pun intended, no man is an island. And as you can see from here, we need all of the disciplines beyond what's in this room now, to work together, different stakeholders at different levels. And so we want to make sure as we develop our program, we're developing the kind of student who sees the value in partnering, in collaborating, in being teachable, in working with other teams who might be different from them, different in nationality, different from where they originated from or their parents originated from. And so that's something that we are very intentional about. So my pitch to students out there, the program exists. We are developing the environmental science, but the marine science is on paper. We hope to have the environmental science very shortly. And if you want a strong program with, you're going to get strong fundamentals, but opportunities to travel. I know Dr. Nwala is taking a group of students to do research and work with her collaborators. I think that's in the works. I think we get all the paperwork signed on that. And that's something we've done. We've taken students to Grand Bahama and we'll be traveling. We have partnerships with other international and local NGOs. And we really want to put the focus on student experience. And if I could have any impact on the program, I would like for our students to leave and say they were in a program where they really felt valued and they were really supported to achieve whatever they wanted to achieve, and they were given the tools to do so.
Thank you for that mouthful, Dr. Watson. I'm going to allow your colleagues to chime in now.
And... I filibuster, right? Sorry.
I know, right? I don't know what to say about you, Dr. Watson. But anyways, I'm going to allow your colleagues to chime in and talk about their areas and what they would say to that prospective student who may have an interest but not be certain. How would you encourage them and their parents to take advantage of the program offerings and opportunities here at University of the Bahamas?
I would say that we are really looking for students who are interested in working outside, who care about their country, who care about the future of their country, because we have so many opportunities to work right now that students have opportunities to work hands-on in doing some of the conservation work that's going on in the country, both with partners, as Dr. Watson mentioned, through internships, through research opportunities, and through their own individual research. I have the pleasure of teaching both an internship class and a research class where students get to explore their own interests in the research capstone class, where they get to design a project that they're really passionate about and investigate it. And in the internship class, students get to work in opportunities all over the islands and explore their areas of interest. But students who come through the program are really excited to be able to work hands-on with country, I think, more than any other science programs that we have throughout the university, possibly. The students are really doing hands-on work, and so they have a great opportunity to do that through the SAS program.
Yeah.
Tell us, what does that hands-on work or hands-on experience look like? I mean, I know a lot of times, a lot of courses are really classroom-based, but when we talk about hands-on experience, what could that possibly look like for a student?
Well, I can start off, for example, just at the end of last semester, the students were involved in a project. We had a class of students involved in a project that took them to Grand Bahama looking at mangrove carbon sequestration. And we know the government is very actively looking into gaining funds internationally, global funds toward the benefit of the country because of the role our carbon plays, our mangroves play, our seagrass play in sequestering carbon from the atmosphere. And blue carbon is a big deal right now. It's being spoken of globally everywhere. And the Bahamas is among the leaders in this area where we're doing research, quantifying our carbon that we have and leading international fora about the way forward in this area, because we are sequestering carbon to a great extent, which benefits the entire world. There's a great benefit. And so we are getting funds to help with this field, and students can work directly with the data collection, with the management of these projects. And so it's a great deal for them. They can be active, their internships, their jobs to be had afterward, working in the fields, the technology they use, the knowledge they gain is certainly useful to many of the NGOs. A lot of our students go directly to work.
Lady and gent, Dr. Anwala, Dr. Delavaux, Dr. Watson, and Dr. Amankwa, thank you all very much for taking the time out to be a guest on this week's episode of University Drive. And to my listening audience, for this podcast and more UB information, and to learn more about our sustainability program, be sure to visit our website at www.ub.edu.bs. And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and join us next week, same time, same radio station, for another exciting edition of University Drive. I'm your host, Nikki Bo. Enjoy the remainder of your day.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations and the Communications and Creative Arts Academic Unit at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.